What's up? This is Movies on Up. The battle to... What's up? This is Movies... God damn it. What's up? What's the show called? Movies on Up. What's up? This is Movies on Up. That's not how I say it.
Say it into the mic.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. The battle for tomorrow is about to begin. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host from the beginning. Plenty of battles along the way, Mr. Ryan.
That's me.
Our tagline for this week, the battle for tomorrow is about to begin. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will join the world of Movies on Up prize package winners, and the post captain will sky a delivery over to you tomorrow. Maybe not by tomorrow, but eventually. But if you know what movie that's from, hit us up. This week, a sky captain of sorts, Captain Marvel.
So to speak.
She can fly.
Yeah, she's a pilot.
In more than one way, yeah. Captain Marvel comes out. We love Brie Larson on this show. We don't hide that. She won an award. Probably.
Yeah.
But her filmography, it's one of those, I wanted this to be a favorite Brie Larson episode. But when we look at her filmography, we both love
the same movies.
So that would just be us talking about the same five movies.
Which I believe we've done before. Like, we did a co-list where we just, but I think we did like, it was more than five.
For Spielberg, we did a 10 co-list.
Yeah,
I think
that was it.
I think we did from 10 down.
She could have got the Spielberg treatment.
I don't think she could have went 10, though.
No,
I don't
not
know
10
that
deep.
We could have went deep.
That would have been tough.
I think it would have been co-list, and I think it would only went five or six deep.
Yeah.
But we love her. She's going to do great.
There will be another day for that.
Yeah, yeah. So
Captain Marvel 2.
I'm excited for Captain Marvel, but also in that movie is Jude Law.
Yes.
He plays Mar-Vell, maybe. And so
I feel like that's on IMDb.
Probably.
I think it is.
Yeah. So he's got a deeper filmography. Even though it's a week to celebrate women and a woman of power, let's do Jude Law. He's got nice childbearing hips. This is one of those where it's like, if you've always asked me, like, do you like Jude Law? Yeah, I really like Jude Law. And then you go through his filmography and it's like, oh, I had a tougher time picking my five than I thought I would, because like Jude Law is just one of those that, like, yeah, I like Jude Law.
And we talk about it often when we do actor lists that sometimes surprise you. Sometimes you think you like a guy and it turns out you like him less. Sometimes you think you really don't like an actress, but you're like, holy shit, everything she's in is amazing. So some of this stuff on the surface, it sounds really easy. And I would be willing to bet that a couple that are pretty high on both of our lists came to mind almost immediately when you start thinking of Jude Law. And like, oh, I love those movies, so I'm sure I love me some Jude Law.
My top three, I love.
I do like all of mine. And this one, I don't think I was surprised. I don't consider him one of my favorite actors, but I had no problem finding five movies of his that I really do enjoy, and I left three off.
See, I have two also, Rans. But the thing with him is, like, a lot of the stuff, it's just, I just don't watch it.
Yeah,
he's in stuff that it's just stuff I haven't
he's
seen.
He's a little like Keira Knightley in that they do a lot of period pieces that aren't really in our wheelhouse. Maybe they're great, but yeah, they're not going to be on this list.
Anyway, your number five favorite Jude Law movie
is a period piece. It is from 2009, directed by Guy Ritchie. It is Sherlock Holmes, starring Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law, and Rachel McAdams. The idea of Guy Ritchie adapting characters from classical literature is probably polarizing. He took another swing recently with King Arthur, and I agree that Guy Ritchie is not necessarily the best fit for that, though I'd argue that there is room for this type of interpretation. We already have a great traditional King Arthur movie. It's called Excalibur. You may have heard of it. We may have just put it on a list about a month ago. And there's been any number of Sherlock Holmes adaptations on film and TV. Guy Ritchie and Robert Downey Jr. are a great match. He is capable of delivering that rapid-fire dialogue and proved capable in the fight scenes as well. And I think Jude Law in this particular case, it's a great use for him as Watson. He was written as more of the straight guy and a serious partner to Holmes, almost an equal. And I think that Strong was a really good and creepy villain. McAdams' character was also really capable, girl power for this week. But this movie lives and dies with the leads. You may not like the way that Ritchie goes about telling these stories, but there is no debate that it is a really excellent performance by Robert Downey Jr., and the relationship between he and Jude Law is really fun. I am a sucker for Guy Ritchie stuff. This does not fill the void of something like Snatch or Lockstock. Oh, well, I'm getting Sherlock Holmes movies from now, so like I'm going to be good. Now, I'd still like him to go back to that stuff. This is a fun interpretation of something you've seen a lot. Like I said, you don't need to keep making, okay, well, I'm going to have this version of this story, and then I'm going to do this and this, and it's all the same. It's all derivative. His was different. You may not like that kind of different, but at least it brought something new or fresh to material that's 200 years old.
And I think this is kind of a perfect way to kick off, because like this is something like I could see this being in my top five or even my also-rans. I left off both of them. They're fine, but they didn't make impressions on me. And I think the timing of it where Benedict's show, Benedict Cumberbatch's right. Sherlock show, was in its peak.
Yeah.
To do this different of a take, you had two modern takes on Sherlock almost competing because they were so different. I feel like if it were to come out like now, we're a little past the heyday of the Cumberbatch Sherlock, I feel like it would resonate more. I mean, we still got two. They're good. They're not bad. I didn't put them on my, they're not, when I think of like, oh, what are really good movies? I don't think of them, but
no,
when you say like, oh, what do you think of this?
Cable
well,
movies
good.
On
yeah.
a Saturday. But yeah, you're right. We already had something going, so why do another relatively serious take on it? Why not have them be a little bit different just to stand out from what you can already watch on TV?
My number five, animated movie from 2012, directed by Peter Ramsey, who was one of the directors of my favorite movie of last year, Into the Spider-Verse, starring Jude Law, Chris Pine, Alec Baldwin, Isla Fisher, Hugh Jackman. It is Rise of the Guardians. This is a DreamWorks movie, and DreamWorks hit that point where they just kind of, they had Megamind to Illumination's Despicable Me, and Rise of the Guardians came out in 2012 when we're at a peak of like you have really good animated movies now. It's solid. It's a good animated kids movie. You know, it's a little bit of a different story. It's your heroes are Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, Jack Frost. Those are like the main heroes, and then they're fighting Jude Law's Pitch, who's like a shadow boogeyman type monster. For what it is, it's enjoyable. I've seen a lot of kids' movies, and there's enough action and jokes and stuff, like, and the cast is good. I like this movie. It just, it's one of those that, you know, but it's like Megamind. I really like Megamind, but something about the DreamWorks movies of late, they just kind of come and go and be forgotten.
They're like the Costco version of the Illumination stuff, like you said, or like the gas station, the GoBots.
Yeah, the GoBots.
I feel like that's a dated reference. My number four dates back to 2001. That's another period piece. It takes place in the 1940s. This time it is Jean-Jacques Arnaud's Enemy at the Gates, starring Joseph Fiennes, Jude Law, Rachel Weisz, and Ed Harris. Parts of this movie are excellent. If you distill it down into a sniper duel, that's the part that I'm talking about that's excellent. There's this love triangle that they put in there between Law and Fiennes and Weisz that I think really kind of bloats the movie, and is they tend to do sometimes in war movies or just movies in general. There's this forced love aspect. It doesn't need to be there. That's not what the movie's about. It doesn't live or die with that angle, but well, we got to have a love story. Otherwise, we don't have a movie. I don't really hold to that. This movie has enough atmospheric tension in the duel that it doesn't need anything else. The sniper duel may be a really small subgenre, but it's starting to be one that I really like. There was the one with Kick-Ass and John Cena a couple years ago. The Wall, yeah, which I thought was really good, really tense. You're just waiting for one mistake and somebody's going to end up dead. And that's kind of where we're at here. Each guy just has to get that other guy to make just the one mistake. There's enough tension there. I don't need anything manufactured in the story. Law and Ed Harris are both guys that can handle carrying that kind of movie. It just seems like that love angle is added in just to give you a break from the high stakes, which kind of does a disservice to the story. At times, the movie makes you really feel like you're lying in your own piss right there next to Jude Law. It's visceral, it's engaging, and then it lets you off the hook by becoming every bad war movie cliche that you've ever seen.
Speaking of lying in your own piss, my number four comes from 2011 from one of my favorite directors. It's Steven Soderbergh with Contagion, with Jude Law, Matt Damon, dead Gwyneth Paltrow, Lawrence Fishburne, Kate Winslet. It's not a Jude Law movie, because
it's not really an anybody movie.
It's an ensemble movie. It's like Traffic. Traffic wasn't a Del Toro movie. It wasn't, here's a ton of people in this. It's done very well. It's an Outbreak movie. I liked Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman, and this was like an updated kind of version of it that felt very real and scary, and it has that Soderbergh feel, the graininess to it. Really, really good movie. And it's one of those, like, I don't necessarily remember Jude Law's part in it. I don't remember most people's part. I remember Gwyneth Paltrow dying. But that's about it. But it's a really, I remember really liking the movie.
It certainly paints that picture of what could very easily happen. It's almost like Contagion is the first part of the movie, and then something like 28 Days Later is the second part. It's the much more action-packed version of what happens after, like, Cotillard was in this too?
I think she might have been, yeah.
Yeah, I think she was one of the CDC doctors. I don't remember. Like you said, it's been a while. There's a ton of people in it. Winslet was a doctor too. Like, if they fuck up, it just becomes 28 Days Later, but a more realistic portrait of that. My number three is a realistic portrait of a Confederate soldier just trying to make his way back home to Cold Mountain. That is the movie from 2003, directed by Anthony Mahengewa, starring Jude Law, Nicole Kidman, and Renee Zellweger. While there didn't need to be a love angle in my last war movie, it is the love angle in Cold Mountain that makes the movie go. Law's Inman deserts the Confederate Army to return to his own true love, Nicole Kidman's Ada. Cold Mountain looks beautiful. John Seale was nominated for Best Cinematography, and Law also picked up a Best Actor nom. Zellweger won for Best Supporting Actress. But the real star of Cold Mountain is the cinematography, but it's also the music. The score is really cool. It's folksy. Elvis Costello, Sting, both picked up noms for Best Original Song. They each wrote one, so that movie had two. Jack White, who plays a deserting guitar player, and a real stretch for him, also added a song. Cold Mountain is a great example of a movie that takes place during a war, but it's not really about the war. It's about what the war takes away and what someone will do to get it back. And watching Law try and get his life back is a hell of a trip. It is a movie about a journey. It just happens to kind of take place towards the tail end of a war. And I think, like we've talked about this before, war movies that it's not Saving Private Ryan because it takes place during a war.
It's like Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker, Casablanca, stuff like that, that the backdrop is a war. Or even like Lincoln. They do have the Battle of Gettysburg in there, but that's not the totality of the movie. And this, I think, is another good, it's probably a better example. We get to see very little of the Civil War. It could have been any given war, and it could have taken place in any country. Somebody just trying to get back home, realizing they've kind of had enough of that nonsense.
My number three, I think, is where our crossover starts. It's another one. It's not a Jude Law movie, but his part is pretty memorable in it. From 2015, written and directed by Paul Feig. It's Spy. It's a Melissa McCarthy movie, 100%.
Rose Statham movie.
It's a Rose Byrne movie. Yeah. Jason Statham steals every scene he's in, but if you keep going down all the great things about it, right, you get Jude Law, who is playing this James Bond-esque character, and it's perfect for him. He shows up and does what he needs to do. He's this kind of unattainable,
smarmy English guy.
Yeah, English guy that she can be the girl in the chair for, but nothing more. And he's got that smugness. It's really, really good. And I don't really confuse the actors, but I started really liking Jude Law, Ewan McGregor, and Clive Owen all at the same time. Because it was about the time that Brosnan was bailing out. It's like, oh, any of these three dudes would be a good Bond.
Yeah. I know Clive Owen was considered.
Clive Owen was my, he was close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, before Daniel Craig got cast, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I always associate those three, but, like, this is a perfect role for him because Jude Law's got that good looks, the charm, he does good in the fight scene. I just really, really like this movie. And yes, he's not the most memorable part of it, but this is one of those movies that has so many good parts that if you remove one, it affects the whole. Even the sidekick, take out the 50 Cent cameos, and everything comes together so well in this movie. Yeah, it's not a Jude Law movie, but I could not put it on.
I could not put it on because I knew it was going to make your list. It would have been very high on mine. I do like that movie an awful lot, a lot more than I thought I was going to like it going in. It looks, and we've talked about it before, it looks like, oh, this is just Melissa McCarthy buffoonery. No, it's not. They let her be the badass in a movie that features Jason Statham, and he's the buffoon. And that may sound funny, but it's actually more funny in practice.
Oh, Statham's so good. And I do love this. This is a problem with marketing, because every Melissa McCarthy movie comes off as like, oh, this is just going to be Melissa McCarthy buffoonery.
Yeah.
But they rarely are anymore. But I just, her scene from Quantico when they're watching her tape and she just goes nuts. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. She's like, well, sorry. I've watched this a dozen times. Like, I love this movie so much.
You want to talk about marketing? My number two was a marketing disaster. It was from 2011. It was directed by Martin Scorsese. It starred Ben Kingsley, Borat, and that kid from Sex Education. It's Hugo. It is fascinating to me that you can have a Martin Scorsese movie that was nominated for a ton of Oscars, but somehow still bombed. None of those things should match up. Scorsese on his own should be able to pull this to box office respectability. Okay, if that didn't happen, the fact that it was nominated for, I don't want to say.
Best Picture, I thought.
Yeah. It got like, I'm not sure if it made quite 10 nominations, but enough to where, like, oh, shit, this is a Martin Scorsese movie that got nominated for a bunch of Oscars. Maybe I should take a look at it. But that's where the marketing really let it down. And the thing about it is a good movie. It's not like you'd get tricked. I watched that pile of shit. No, it is actually really good. And it looks amazing. It has some great performances in it. But people, I don't think, knew who the movie was for. Is it a family movie, or did Scorsese just decide to make a cartoon and maybe I don't want to bring my kids to see a Scorsese movie? It is a love letter to film and imagination and even love. Borat, who plays the villain in the movie, even he is given a really good love story in this, and it ends up making him a character that isn't just the bad guy. We've talked a lot about marketing and some people, advertising in general, like, I don't listen to advertising. I buy what I want. If you're skeptical about marketing and how effective that can be, I think this is a great example of just how effective marketing is, but in the opposite direction. What should have been a layup, a highly decorated movie from director Martin Scorsese, through a poorly directed campaign, turned Hugo into one of the biggest bombs of Scorsese's career, and it was a movie that was nominated for Best Picture.
To sum that up, I'm familiar with Hugo. I know it. I do not know what it's about.
I've watched it and I can barely tell you what it's about.
I have no idea what this movie's about. I know it's Scorsese. Chloe Moretz is in it, I think.
Yes, she is.
Didn't know Jude Law was in it until you put it on your number two favorite Jude Law movie.
Yeah, he's not the star of it by any chance. I believe he plays Asia Butterfield's dad, and it's Butterfield's movie. Him and Moretz really do carry it. Sacha Baron Cohen was excellent in it. That's about where I started to turn on him. Like, oh, shit, this guy can actually act, too. But, yeah, you wouldn't know what it's about.
Queen biopic he's going to make. That's perfect casting.
Yeah, he's probably going to win an award for that.
Now, my number two is a movie that I love, and I try to put on any list that I can. I feel like I just put it on a list not too long ago. I don't remember what we were doing that put it on the list, but I think it was about Brothers. Maybe. I think I snuck it in on a Brothers episode. It is from 1997, written and directed by Andrew Niccol. It's Gattaca. It's another one of those. We're seeing a theme. It's not a Jude Law movie. Jude Law is essential to it, though. Jude Law is crucial to it. Ethan Hawke wants to be in the Pretty People Club. Jude Law is, but he's in a wheelchair, so he steals his DNA and pretends to be him. it's a really, really good movie. I love this movie. I think of movies like this and Minority Report, which are like these really good sci-fi movies that it's hard to think like, this is 20-some years old.
Yeah.
Because like, you watch it now and it's like, oh, that's still relevant. Like Minority Report now, it's like, oh, yeah, that's still... It doesn't feel like a 1997 version of the future. It still feels like the future, but it's not...
Sci-fi has the ability to do that. You can either be super dated almost immediately, or it holds up. Not to get off topic or anything, but like I saw that they're going to release a 4K version of Alien for the 40th anniversary. It was 40 years old. Yeah, like the punch card system and everything that runs the ship, that part's dated, but everything else looks effing great. Yeah. And Gattaca's the same way. Like it's not effects heavy because the concept is good. That's what drives the ship on my Minority Report and a lot of these good sci-fi movies. The concept makes you look past diodes and blinking bulbs.
Yeah, and it sets that atmosphere. Like I like what Strange Days did. Strange Days came out in 98, took place in 99, but it was a very futuristic 99. I just like that it's like, here's this kind of alternate thing. And the good sci-fi, it doesn't matter what year it's supposed to be. Because it just feels like you're in a different place. But yeah, Gattaca, I love. Again, not a Jude Law movie, but, you know, still my number one, maybe.
It's your number one.
My number one might be a Jude Law movie.
Ah,
we'll see.
I see. My number one's a Tom Hanks movie.
So is mine.
Yeah, I had a feeling. This was the one where I was like, well, shit. I can't not put this on. We've talked a lot about James Bond, so I felt like I had to have a Daniel Craig movie on here, too. And I thought if I put it at number one, that's when it's going to cross over. That movie, of course, is Sam Mendes' Road to Perdition from 2002, starring the aforementioned Tom Hanks, Paul Newman, who is absolutely incredible in this, Jude Law, and the actual James Bond, Daniel Craig. This is a great gangster movie with a couple really good performances. Newman was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his portrayal of the Irish mob boss and surrogate father for Hanks's Michael Sullivan. Hanks is great as well, playing a character that I think Liam Neeson seems to be cast a lot in that role now. Violent man who will go to great lengths to protect his family and get revenge. Admittedly, Tom Hanks is a more likable guy in that, especially now. During our Liam Neeson episode, if you happen to listen to it, Dave and I both had a couple movies that ended up, I think, being poor versions of Road to Perdition. The relationships that are at the core of these movies, or should be at the core of these movies, I think is done well in Road to Perdition, with Newman basically having to choose between the son he has, which is Daniel Craig, and the son that he loves, Tom Hanks. It's incredibly well shot. It earned Conrad Hall a posthumous award for Best Cinematography. Jude Law, actually, it's a good juxtaposition between your number two, where he was a handsome guy. In this, he is not handsome Jude Law. He's the creepy assassin that's sent to kill Hanks. And in a movie with grounded leaks and actual historical figures, he seems a little out of place. He's kind of cartoonish.
He feels like he's from a comic book.
Yes.
Which the whole thing is a graphic novel. He's the comic book character in this comic book.
He feels like he's left over from the source material. It's almost a little like Kevin from Sin City. His skin is really sallow from being a photographer and hanging out in the dark room. His gums are messed up. He's got a receding hairline. It is not necessarily my favorite Jude Law performance. It's not my favorite performance of his on the list, but of all the movies that he's been in, this is the one that I'm like, yeah, Road to Perdition. That's going to be my number one. It's what sold me on Mendes. It was his follow-up to American Beauty. But I think this one was just as well made, but it's a little bit easier to follow as far as story goes.
This was my number one. I mean, when we did our favorite Tom Hanks episode, it was my number one Tom Hanks movie. It would probably be my number one Daniel Craig movie. I just realized the little kid is Tyler Hoechlin, the one that's playing Superman on Supergirl. Did not realize that. So if we ever did a favorite Tyler Hoechlin movie, it'd be my number one.
Did not realize Superman was on Supergirl.
Maybe. I think so. I don't watch it, but it's in the credits. it's such a good movie. And I really, really like Jude Law in it because he's just creepy. It's similar to a Scorsese. It's Mendes doing a Scorsese movie almost, where it is that mobster movie, that gangster movie. He's a comic book character in it, and I like it because juxtaposed with Tom Hanks, who is the anti-comic book character, the everyman, the regular dude, and then you just have this monster. Like, that's essentially what Jude Law is he's a monster.
In a world full of monsters. I mean, mobsters,
He's the literal monster amongst metaphorical monsters, and it's such a good movie. It's so, so good, and I'm shocked that that was our only crossover, really, because I only had two others that I thought maybe.
Yeah, Spy was one that I knew was going to be on your list. I had a good feeling Gattaca was, and I like Gattaca, but I don't love it the way that you do. So, I mean, I was pretty sure I knew what 60% of your list was going to be. I know you don't like Sherlock Holmes, so I felt comfortable there. My other two, Sky Captain is a movie that I like an awful lot. It certainly would have been on the list, but I talk about that a lot. I'd rather put on a movie like Sherlock Holmes that I don't talk about than drone on and on about how great Sky Captain is, although it is. I like Closer, too. Speaking of the other James Bond,
I thought
Clive
Closer
Owen.
And Sky Captain would be on.
Yeah,
yours.
They would be, but I talk about them too much, so I left them off.
Yeah, I had I Heart Huckabees and Side Effects from a few years back. I thought was competent. It was a solid movie. So that's it. See Captain Marvel this week with Jude Law. It'll probably jump into my top five, I'm sure.
Oh, favorite Jude Law movies? Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably knocks out Sherlock Holmes.
I'd knock out whatever my 4 and 5 were. Next week, Wonder Park comes to theaters, about an imaginary amusement park that comes to life. So we thought, let's imagine our favorite amusement park movies. So that'll be a fun one to do. It's nice to do a stupid list every once in a while. And so we did that because we get kind of movie and actor heavy moving forward until summer. But join back next week. It'll be a roller coaster of an episode as we talk about our favorite amusement park movies. But until then,
keep it up.